It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it is 59 degrees under partly to mostly cloudy skies, depending on which direction you look. Out at the airport there, showing calm winds, 10 miles of visibility, and 64% humidity. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 62, west winds to 20, gusting to 30. Partly cloudy overnight tonight with a low around 49, west winds to 20, gusting to 30. And mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 61, west winds coming down to 10 to 15. Coming up on the Midday Report, Brian Venois goes aboard the icebreaker Healy. The Alaska Board of Education has voted unanimously to ban trans athletes from girls' high school sports. And Alaska's largest solar farm ever is gearing up to go into energy production.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Janine Herbst. As the southeastern U.S. continues to feel impacts from Hurricane Idalia, the White House is asking Congress for $16 billion in emergency funding to replenish the Federal Emergency Management Agency's Disaster Relief Fund. NPR's Tamara Keith has more.
On August 10th, the White House sent an emergency request to Congress for $12 billion in disaster relief funds. That money hasn't come through yet, but with the fires on Maui and in Louisiana, flooding in Vermont, and Hurricane Idalia slamming into Florida and Georgia, the White House Budget Office now says that earlier ask isn't going to be enough. Liz Sherwood-Randall is the president's Homeland Security advisor.
Every American expects FEMA to be there if they are experiencing a disaster. And we want to be sure that we can fund that support that these communities will need.
Congress returns from recess next week, and the White House is urging swift action. Tamara Keith, NPR News.
The White House says it's seeing notable progress by Ukrainian forces as they try to push back Russian defenses in the southern part of the country. NPR's Franco Ordonez reports U.S. officials are now watching how Russia will respond.
The military developments have occurred over the last 72 hours against the second line of Russian defenses near Zaporizhia. That's according to White House spokesman John Kirby.
We have seen some notable progress. That is not to say that they aren't mindful that they still got some tough fighting ahead of them as they try to push further south. They know that better than anybody.
He said progress has been slower than the Ukrainians have said they hope to see, but he emphasized that they've been fighting courageously every single day. Kirby also said he was not in position to confirm a Russian government statement that it has shifted its newest nuclear-capable intercontinental ballistic missiles to combat duty. Franco Ordonez, NPR News, The White House.
Employers added 187,000 jobs last month, more than economists were expecting. The Labor Department says the unemployment rate rose slightly to 3.8%, the highest level since February of 2022. President Biden praised the report.
As we head into Labor Day, we ought to take a step back and take note of the fact that America is now one of the strongest job-creating periods in our history, in the history of our country. And it wasn't that long ago that America was losing jobs.
Average hourly earnings are up 0.2% for the month and 4.3% from a year ago, with health care leading the way, followed by leisure and hospitality jobs. Preliminary closing numbers on Wall Street, the Dow up 116 points, that's up to about 0.3%. The NASDAQ down 3 points, that's down a fraction. The S&P 500 up 8. You're listening to NPR News from Washington.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor llama al 907-481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. The Coast Guard icebreaker Healy docked at Kodiak's Pier 2 last week as its final stop before an Arctic expedition. The ship is in town to restock on supplies and give the crew a bit of time on land before they spend weeks at sea. KMXT's Brian Benoit went aboard the ship and has this report.
The Healy's engines were running as crews walked the decks performing routine maintenance last week. The ship is 420 feet long, about half the length of the pier, and is the largest vessel the Coast Guard operates. Kodiak is the ship's last stop in Alaska before heading on the year's final Arctic mission. Michelle Shalip, the Healy's captain, says the hull is specially designed for getting through ice to access some of the most remote places in the world.
Steaming at 7 knots, we can break through up to 4.5 feet. If we get into the 8 feet, about 3 meters, then we need to do what we call back and ram. So the ship is very, very powerful and very heavy. We're 16,000 long tons. So we're able to use the ship's momentum and weight to break through ice.
The boat has 2 inches of steel on the bow and can even maneuver in ice fields. However, the crew does their best to avoid large icebergs. Shalip says while the Coast Guard operates the vessel and it's capable of performing Arctic rescues, the vessel's main purpose is research.
The Healy was built in collaboration with the National Science Foundation, so we have all the authorities that a Coast Guard vessel normally would have, and we can conduct those in the high latitudes, in addition to supporting the National Science Foundation and other organizations in conducting science.
Igor Polyakov is a professor with the University of Alaska Fairbanks and one of the lead scientists aboard the icebreaker. He says the information scientists get from remote locations is crucial for climate research.
We inform communities, stakeholders that changes are coming. We may expect with a certain probability that this and that happens in a certain period of time. That's our mission. And politicians take this information forward to make decisions.
Polyakov says the information they find in the North Pole is direct proof that human-caused climate change is happening. One example they're monitoring on this mission is a layer of fresh water under sea ice. That layer usually acts as a buffer between warm saltwater currents and sea ice, but Polyakov says it's under threat from climate change.
This fresh water is very cold, and it prevents ice from melt from the below. But what we observe now, thanks to our program and thanks to logistical support from Healy, now we see that this layer of fresh water is disappearing.
He says cooperation between northern countries is key for this kind of Arctic research.
There are so many international waters, there are so many international collaborations ongoing in the Arctic, so without international collaboration we cannot proceed.
The vessel's next port call will be in Europe to connect with scientists there. After this mission, the ship will return to its home port in Seattle for the winter. Aboard the icebreaker Healy, I'm Brian Benoit.
The Alaska Board of Education voted unanimously on Thursday to approve a ban on trans athletes participating in girls' high school sports. The change will apply to all public high schools in the state. Board member Jeff Erickson was among those who spoke in favor of the regulation, citing safety and fairness concerns.
I'm not convinced that there isn't a potential safety issue, or I am convinced there is a physiological difference for sure. I think there's some unfairness. I think the federal law at present protects women's sports.
The regulation says that schools that participate in the Alaska School Activities Association, the governing body for high school sports, must limit participation on high school athletic teams to, quote, females who are assigned female at birth. Board Chair James Fields noted that an appeal process is in place and says that athletes who identify as intersex or athletes who transitioned before puberty could be eligible for a waiver. The board did not take public comment during the special meeting, and student advisor Felix Myers was the only board member who spoke in opposition to the proposed change. Myers said he felt the regulation was a distraction and that the board should refocus their priorities to train coaches to recognize the signs of eating disorders that plague young athletes.
This has not been an issue that's occurred. It doesn't seem like this is a problem that we need to fix currently.
According to ASAA officials, Native Youth Olympics and downhill skiing are the only two sports that are not sanctioned by the ASAA and would not be subject to the regulation. The board passed a resolution in support of the change in March and put the changes up for public comment in June. At a July meeting, the board decided to postpone action to answer additional questions posed by the over 1,400 pages of written testimony submitted by members of the public. The Mat-Su School District had the only trans ban in effect in Alaska prior to the board's vote. There are currently 19 states with active bans on trans athletes competing in sports that match their gender identity. Courts in four other states are deciding the fate of similar bans. Alaska's largest solar farm was unveiled this week in the city of Houston, about an hour north of Anchorage. The project owners gathered with local and state officials to ceremoniously cut a gold ribbon with a giant pair of scissors.
One, two, three!
Solar!
The woman holding the scissors is Jen Miller, founder of Renewable Independent Power Producers. Her company broke ground on a 45-acre project last summer, and it's now feeding power into the Mat-Su Borough electric grid.
It's not the first in the state, but I will say it's the first of a material scale. It's the first where we brought in outside investment, and even when tying into the grid, you know, it's a large enough scale that when it drops in and out, it will be noticed, it will be felt.
Matanuska Electric Association CEO Tony Izzo says the utility is actively trying to increase its renewable energy sources without increasing rates.
This project from day one provides energy to MEA members for less than our natural gas-fired generation. In a meeting with some other representatives from Clean Capital a few months back, I think my message was, how fast can you build more of these things?
Clean Capital is a national company that helps finance these kinds of projects and will be the long-term owner. Izzo says the Houston RA could, at peak production, provide about 5% of the utility's output. It's expected to power about 1,400 homes. As for the persistent rainy weather this summer, Miller says the array was built with Alaska's climate in mind.
One of the things that's unique to our solar design is that we actually oversize on the panel side just because Alaska has so many cloudy days. And so because panels have gotten so cost competitive, we're able to kind of overinstall on the panel side so that on cloudy days we can boost our production and it makes the project more economic overall.
Miller says the Houston farm is currently feeding small amounts of power into the grid for testing, but it should be fully operational by next month. Her company is currently looking at building another large solar project on the Kenai Peninsula. Before the summer fishing season has wrapped up in western Alaska, another kind of salmon shows up, the salmon berries. Known more widely as cloudberries, they have a sweet and sour profile and a richness that many find hard to describe. KYUK's Evan Erickson has this story about how their arrival is celebrated across the YK Delta.
It's one of a kind. You'll never taste it anywhere else.
That's KYUK host Sam Berlin, who took two separate overnight trips from Bethel this August with his wife to harvest the salmon berries. Even on the tundra that lies within the city limits, the berries were abundant this year.
You must have picked somewhere around 25 gallons altogether. Where our tent was going to be set, there was that much berries. You know, we picked it first, cleaned it, and then we set our tent. We couldn't pick them all. There were so many of them.
But the nice weather that brought Bethel families out to their favorite picking spots also brought out swarms of biting insects.
I couldn't keep down and keep picking. I had to keep moving because when I breathe in through my nose, they'd get in. I kept praying, Lord, you told us if we ask in your name, you'll send wind. It will happen, you know. And then the next day, we got up and there was wind. There was wind. No bugs at all. It was a perfect day.
Berries are the only fresh fruit that Alaska has to offer, but fortunately they are also superfoods packed full of vitamins and nutrients. Both gathering and consuming them are exercises in wellness.
I think anybody that's spent
time out in the berry patch picking, like, can feel the benefits. You're stepping back and you're like, you have one mission, and that's to pick berries.
Dr. Katie Spellman works at the University of Alaska Fairbanks International Arctic Research Center and grew up picking berries in interior Alaska.
I think that there's definitely psychological benefits to it, but actually documented in Alaska through health research as reduced obesity, reduced diabetes, reduced dementia.
Spellman says this year's late spring may have been just what the salmon berries needed.
The timing of snowmelt is really the starting gun for berries, and when you have a later start to the season, it kind of buffers the plants, especially cloudberries, from some of the potential windstorms, ice storms, early season icing that can destroy the flowers of the berries.
The late spring in western Alaska this year was an exception to longer and warmer growing seasons that have become more common since the 1980s. Spellman says they are a result of the unfolding effects of climate change, but she says that berry harvests are ultimately the result of a complex interplay between weather and the insects that the berries rely on for pollination.
It's not as simple as growing season length. It's more of a sequence of events that need to line up to make the perfect berry year. And that's why whenever I pick a berry now, I like think about everything that it had to go through to get to where it's at, and I think it's a miracle, and I do not waste any berry ever.
Sam and his wife Carol also do not waste berries. As grandparents, they still try to take full advantage of opportunities to harvest the variety of berries that have been a part of their life growing up on the Delta.
Salmon berry is Atsalukbak. Blueberry is Sugat. Blackberries is Tanukbak. Buyugagat is wild raspberries. Red berries are Kawikhelit.
When it comes to consuming these berries, many Yupik make a guduk, which simply means mixed together. Berries, fish, and other wild foods are folded into whipped fat. The moose, caribou, walrus, and seal fats of the past have largely been replaced with Crisco today. Berlin is a fan of a guduk in all its forms.
There was a time when I was younger, I ate it with every meal. Even in breakfast, I used to eat it like cereal. Put some guduk into a bowl. Put milk, a little bit of sugar, mix it up, eat it.
Berlin has tried a lot of aguduks, and these days he swears that Carol's is simply the best there is. When his doctor told him to watch his cholesterol, he was unfazed.
Yeah, I was told at one time to stop eating it, just totally cut it off. And I told him, I'm sorry, but I can't do that. I've eaten it ever since I can remember. And I'll die eating it.
While the salmon berries and blueberries have mostly finished up in western Alaska, the ripening of blackberries and red berries means that plenty of work and a guduk remain. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
Summertime in Homer means berries are ripe for the picking. Unfortunately, this year's cold, wet weather has led to berry picking struggles there for farmers and foragers alike. KBBI's Jamie Deep reports on the subpar berry season in the southern Kenai Peninsula.
People in Homer and the southern Kenai Peninsula may have noticed fewer berries in their gardens and on the trails this year. The lack of berries comes from the cold summer and is affecting residents in different ways. Joey Hausler is a school counselor who works in multiple elementary schools in Homer and Anchor Point. In his first summer in Homer last year, people knew him for picking hundreds of pounds of blueberries.
When I realized that there was all of these wild blueberries to pick, I right away was recognizing that that was something I was going to try to make use of and do something with. So it hasn't taken me long to sort of establish myself as sort of a blueberry person around here.
However, this year, Hausler could barely find any berries around Homer. Hausler said he was getting about a tenth to a twentieth of the berries he did last year and questioned if it was worth still going out to pick them.
I've just been making a lot less trips out looking for berries because it just feels like the time is not as well spent when I'm taking a couple hours and picking just like one container's worth, which is maybe just like a couple pounds.
The poor berry season also led to businesses in Homer adjusting where they source their fruit. For Lewis Maurer, things look unclear. As the owner of Bear Creek Winery, he relies on local fruits and berries to make wine. The wet weather this year led to a delay for the berries, but Maurer still expects to get a harvest of some sort. Over the years, the winery has found ways to diversify their fruit sources for when harvests fluctuate. With the berry wines, that could mean relying on frozen fruit from last year's harvest.
By freezing the fruit and keeping it stable that way, it allows us to kind of average out the seasonal changes. We might get so much fruit in one season that we actually use that for 2 years because we get so little the next season.
Jason Davis, owner of Sweet Gale Mead Works and Cider House, produces mead with local fruits and honey. This year, Davis has to lean on more fruit sources outside Homer. While he's able to get enough blueberries, black currants, and Sitka strawberries for making mead, raspberries may pose an issue since Davis only sources them in Homer.
The only concern is that we might run out of red raspberry or golden raspberry if the snow comes before they ripen, because they're just barely starting to ripen right now.
Casey Matney is an associate professor for the University of Alaska Fairbanks Cooperative Extension Service. He said the cold, wet weather's effect on the soil is to blame for the poor, late growing season.
Everything was delayed because soil temperatures barely got into the temperature zone that plants need, which is about 40 to 42 degrees. And when you look at average daily highs and lows, we didn't get a lot of growth. And so the degree days or the days when the plants would actually grow well were really scant across the whole season.
Matney said the cold weather also meant fewer nutrients released into the soil, and the cloudy days usually cut the amount of sunlight reaching plants by two-thirds. All of this led to difficult conditions for berries to grow. Thankfully, things are looking up. According to Matney, current long-term predictions show warmer temperatures than the region has had in the past.
Next year, any of the plants that we have growing probably won't be feeling this negative effect continuously, and they'll probably be just fine next year.
For people concerned for the future, Matney said farmers and gardeners can increase soil temperatures by laying down solar mulch, clear plastic that lets sunlight through and traps its warmth. In the meantime, people in Homer can enjoy the abundance of rhubarb and foliage that flourished from this year's weather instead. In Homer, I'm Jamie Deep.
The unemployment rate is up, but that's not necessarily bad news. I'm Novosavo with the Marketplace Minute. The rate in August rose to 3.8%, low by historical standards, but the highest since February last year. The economy also added 187,000 jobs. So why the disconnect between the two figures? Well, it's because of new entrants to the labor force, where the participation rate rose for the first time since March. So more people looking for work pushed up the jobless rate. The Labor Department also reported that wage growth moderated in August to 0.2% after rising 0.8% a month earlier. These trends in the labor market could further encourage the Federal Reserve to pause interest rate hikes. Other factors include signs that inflation has been moderating. I'm Nova Safo with the Marketplace Minute.
Marketplace Minute is supported by JLL, providing commercial real estate leasing and management. JLL.com.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the first day of September, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 7:10. It will set again at 9:07, giving us 13 hours and 57 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 52 seconds compared to yesterday. A record high temperature for this date was 75 degrees set in 1930, and a record low was 36 degrees set in chilly 1919. Currently 59 degrees in Kodiak under mostly cloudy skies. At the airport, they are showing northwest winds to 7 miles per hour, and they have 10 miles of visibility. Mostly sunny skies are predicted for the rest of the afternoon with a high near 62, west winds to 20, gusting to 30. Those west winds are expected to be 20, gusting to 30 overnight as well, and finally die down a little tomorrow with west winds to 15 tomorrow. Partly cloudy overnight with a low near 49. Mostly cloudy tomorrow with a high near 61. Let's check in with our latest from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Well, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 40, date issued 10 a.m. on August 31st. There will be a 48-hour extension to the current commercial salmon fishing period from 6 p.m. Friday, September 1st, until 6 p.m. Sunday, September 3rd, in the following areas. In the inner Karluk section of the southwest Kodiak District, the northwest Afognak and Raspberry Strait sections of the Afognak District, the mainland district, and the Cape Alatak, Alatak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alatak District. Cost recovery fisheries are scheduled to begin in Katoi Bay Special Harvest Area on September 2nd. All cost recovery information may be obtained by calling 486-6559. Closed waters will be reduced until 6 p.m. Sunday, September 3rd at Karluk Lagoon's exit channel terminus at the ocean shoreline, stream number 255-101. As previously announced, the following areas are open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice. The Outer Aikuluk, Outer Karluk, Sturgeon, and Halibut Bay sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the East End Kodiak District, the Humpy Deadman section of the Alatak District, and the Duck Bay, Izua Bay, Outer Katoi Bay, Southwest Afognak, and Northeast Afognak sections of the Afognak District. Closed waters are expanded until further notice in that portion of the southwest Afognak section of the Afognak District within 1/2 nautical mile of the beach near the stream terminus of Molina Creek, stream number 252-105, between 58 degrees 10 north latitude and 58 degrees 11 north latitude. Until further notice, within the Kodiak area, only that portion of the northwest and southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse and gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Other closed waters are shown in the Kodiak area salmon statistical chart detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations and statistical charts. Harvest strategies and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And, Mariners, here is your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, out to 15 nautical miles. Small craft advisory through Saturday with southwest winds to 30 knots today and 13-foot seas. West 25 tonight with 8-foot seas. And west 25 tomorrow with 8-foot seas. Over in the Shelikof Strait, gale warning today with southwest 35 becoming 30 knots in the afternoon with 11-foot seas going down to 8-foot seas tonight where the winds are expected to turn to the west to 30. Or tomorrow in the Shelikof, southwest 30 and seas to 9 feet. Well, paving work and asphalt milling continues on Mission Road. There's expected to be a road closure and pilot car starting today, and work is expected to go into next week due to weather delays. So look for a pilot car from now on if you're going to travel on Mission, and if you don't have to travel on Mission, please don't do so at all. They won't be working on Monday in observance of the holiday.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 3 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.
Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the September 1st edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. September! Hard to believe it's here already, but I'm ready. September is one of my favorite months. I look forward to enjoying all that is offered this month. Fish in the rivers, beautiful colors in the fields, and subtle changes in the forest. And just a little bit of night sky within which to admire the universe. But right now, there are a few clouds and a blue sky, and it's a lovely day. Let's hope it lasts at least part of the holiday weekend. Labor Day weekend in Kodiak means it's time for the rodeo and state fair. Drop your exhibits off on Friday from 9 to 6 p.m., and then head over to the outdoor stage for some music and dancing. The music starts at 7 p.m. on Friday. Saturday and Sunday, everything kicks off at noon at the fairgrounds. There are a ton of activities for young and old alike. Many of the family activities are from noon to 3-ish on both days and include a petting zoo, hayride, games for the kids, and much, much more. The exhibit hall features everything from garden exhibits to live animals and photography. And don't worry about getting hungry while you're out at the fair either. There's always great food there. When you've walked all around and your feet are starting to get sore, it'll be time to sit back and enjoy the rodeo. That kicks off at 3 p.m. on Saturday and Sunday in the main hall, featuring everything from barrel racing to calf roping. See you at the fairgrounds this weekend. The fish are plentiful in the streams, rivers, and along the shores right now. The silvers are there. You may have to fight your way through some pinks to get to them, but they're there. However you choose to celebrate your holiday weekend, I hope you get to spend some of it outdoors enjoying all Kodiak offers this time of year. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.